Welcome to Challenge Accepted. I'm your host, Stephanie Lucas, a marriage and family therapist by trade and mom to a daughter with hearing loss. I'm creating a space for parents and caregivers of special needs families to find support, validation, and acceptance by sharing stories of a broad range of families with unique challenges. While this isn't therapy and does not replace the advice of a medical provider, we'll dive into the tougher parts of parenting together and join a team of support from others who get it. This next half hour is about you, your experiences, your emotions, and being allowed to take up space as a parent and human being. So hands in, ears on, hearts open, team, this is Challenge Accepted. Hey team, we're here with our first interview of the second half of season one, Crystal and Andrew Wallach. I interviewed them separately, so first you'll hear Crystal's story, and then Andrew will come in with his part. Crystal reached out to me because she identified with the podcast and wanted to share their story. By the way, I'd love for more of you to do this. She shared about their experience with their third child, Ari, who stayed in the NICU due to complications with his lungs and breathing. I really loved hearing her story and the meaning that she created from her experience, and I felt like getting her husband's perspective would really enrich their narrative around being a support for one another through such a difficult moment. I think the way these two told their stories is a really beautiful representation of how a marriage can really be the foundation of survival during medical complications or scary moments. They were able to lean on each other and do what needed to be done with each other's support. This is a really great one, and I'm excited to share it with you. Take a listen.
All right. Today, I'm here with Crystal Wallach. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little about your story and your journey.
Yeah. So I've been a writer my whole life. Like, I've always written, I've always journaled. I'm a big fan of Taylor Swift, and I used to write like song parodies based off of her songs and mostly about like silly stuff. And even like when I was in elementary school, I wrote a story that it was a creative writing story that won an award at the school, and I shared it in front of the whole school. So I've always loved writing, and I've always been a writer. And my husband, who's a licensed social worker, he said, you should write a book, you should write a book, you should publish, you should publish. And I was always like, I don't have anything real to talk about. Like, I just write silly stuff. I just write, you know, song parodies and, you know, make fun of myself. And he was like, well, you know, one day you will. And when I was sitting in the NICU with my son, he had a pneumothorax during the delivery. So both of his lungs collapsed like a literal blown up balloon, just squashed. And he wasn't breathing. He was rushed away. I never got to like hold him or anything like that. And because of the specific issue that he had, I wasn't allowed to hold him, and I wasn't even allowed to touch him. Because they told me that if he gets irritated at all and he cries, that crying, I mean, even as adults, when you cry, you will hyperventilate, your lungs start to hurt. So he couldn't cry. And so there was no touching, no holding, no nothing at all. I just sat there. So while I was sitting there, I started writing and on my phone. And because this was in the middle of coronavirus, it was really at the height of it last year. My phone was in a plastic bag. And so I'm sitting there on my phone in a plastic bag, and I just started writing in my notes app that what he was dreaming about or thinking about in his head, which I think it just kind of helped me to think that maybe he didn't know that he was in the hospital, that he was off on some adventure. Mm-hmm. And so I started writing that he was on these adventures, and just to kind of heal myself. And then when I got home, I realized that this was it. Like, this was the real thing that my husband had been talking about, that I could really write something. And so I did, and I wrote a series. Like, I have a whole series out, and I wrote the whole thing before I even told my husband that I had written anything, because it was just kind of for me at first. And then like I decided I wanted to publish it, and he was like, yep, do it, let's do it. Like, I don't even care what it's about. I know it's going to be good. Let's do it. So we pursued that. And then as I was writing and editing and going through the whole publishing process, my daughter was like, well, I want to write a book too. And I said, well, okay, then like write a book. And she goes, well, what do I write about? And I said, I don't know. You have to think of that. I said, it took me 33 years to think of an idea worth publishing. And, you know, but once you have a good idea, then we'll publish it. And so we had been talking about it for a while. And then one day she had a massive meltdown, which in the middle of coronavirus was not uncommon. Mm-hmm. My husband and I are both therapists, so we talk about our feelings a lot. And she's really good at talking about her feelings. She doesn't usually have meltdowns, but in the middle of a pandemic, staying home, having a baby brother in the NICU in the pandemic while we were homeschooling, it was a lot for a 7-year-old. And she had this total meltdown. And I told her, go draw your feelings. And I said it a little bit like nicer than that, but that was that was the gist of it. And so she went in her room and she did, and she came out with this drawing of a hurricane with a lot of faces in it. And she was explaining it to me and showing it to me. And then all of a sudden we both paused, and we both in the same moment were like, this is it. Mm-hmm. Like this is the idea. And so we sat down and we wrote it out. And it all like happened at the same time. Her book happened, you know, right after I started publishing the Ari book. And, you know, so I had my idea, she had her idea, we were going through the process together. And then we ended up being able to publish both books on the same day. Wow. We kind of had this like mother-daughter, you know, launching of our two books. And it was just this like series of events that happened to us that led to this really cool thing.
Yeah, that's amazing. I was thinking about, you know, my whole big thing is that these events, whether it's a NICU stay or disability diagnosis or whatever, happens to the whole family, right? It's not just the kiddo in the NICU, it's the siblings at home, it's mom going back and forth, it's dad, you know, being worried and wondering. It sounds like writing was really healing for your whole system. Like your husband was mm-hmm. so inspired by you finally, you know, living out that dream, and you were able mm-hmm. to heal in your own way. And then your daughter also picked that up in her own way of healing. I love that.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think, you know, once you have a baby, it's all about the baby, right? Like, how's the baby? But then when he was in the NICU, it was the whole family. And I think being in the middle of a pandemic just added this whole extra layer to it, because school shut down when I was 7 months pregnant. I got laid off a week after school shut down from my job that I had been at for 3 years. Wow. And it was like all this happening to our whole family. And then, you know, you have a baby, which having a baby in the pandemic was hard. Then having a NICU baby in the pandemic, we were only allowed to have one parent per day. So you it couldn't even be I go, then you go. Whoever was there for the day, that was it until the next day. Yeah. And so I wasn't not going to see my child. So unfortunately, my husband was the one not seeing him. We were there for 2 weeks. And again, because of COVID, there was no school, there was no camp, there was no nothing. My husband was home with our girls. I had a C-section, so I couldn't drive myself to the hospital. Right. And it was an hour away. So I'm like trying to find rides, trying to find childcare, you know, I couldn't take care of the girls by myself, even if my husband had been the one to go to the hospital. So it was the whole entire family that was affected by this event. And once we all got home and the dust kind of settled into, okay, this is our new normal routine, we all started like pushing forward in this really incredible way that really brought us all much closer together. And I think a lot of people don't realize how much the little kids are affected by, you know, just things that go on. My girls were affected by COVID, and they were affected by schools closing. They were affected by having a baby. Then they were affected by having a baby in the NICU. It's like, you know, it's a lot for a little kid to handle. So it was just really incredible that we were able to, we all just went into the same mode of how do we move forward now? How do we take this experience and do something with it instead of just sit in the sadness?
Yeah, I was wondering about that, because I'm sure, you know, when he especially was in the NICU, I'm sure there's anger and frustration and overwhelm and sadness and all of these emotions that are just stuck, right? There's not a great way, besides writing in your phone, to get those things and move them through and move them out. And it's such a testament to building some meaning out of what's happening, right? Even though you have no control.
Yeah. And I was talking a little bit about that with one of my other friends, and I've seen like Facebook posts about it. And people kept telling me, wow, how do you do it? Wow. How are you doing it? Wow. You're such a great mom. Wow. You're such a rock star for doing all this. And the whole time I was like, no, I'm drowning. Mm-hmm. Like I'm doing really horrible. Like, this is really hard. Stop calling me Superwoman. Stop calling me a rock star. Like, I didn't ask for this. I don't want this. I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be a rock star. I don't want to do this. Like, this is just what I'm doing, not by choice, but really I'm drowning and could really use some help instead of you just thinking I'm such a great mom. And, you know, so it's really hard to be sitting in all this sadness and sitting in all this anger, worrying about if he was going to come home at all. And just everyone else is, wow, you're such a great mom. I'm like,
thanks.
No, like, thanks, but no, like I need to do something. I need to do something with this, because there were days that I did want to just sit in the sad. There were days that I didn't want to get out of bed. The days that my husband went to the hospital, I just sat in my bed, because what was I going to do? And I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. You know, but then once you come out of it and you kind of realize like, okay, we're on the other side. He is home. He is, you know, okay. Now I need to do something with this experience, and I need to turn it into something instead of just sitting in it. Mm-hmm. And that's what we all did.
I love it. I like too that it was your gifts, right? You, something that had always been a dream of yours. I think that sometimes in the world of special needs, unique challenges, people are like, well, focus on the kid, focus on the issue with the kid, focus on what they need. And that's all fine. But also the parent gets to be a human who has emotions to process and meaning to make and self-care to enact and totally refigure sometimes. And that it's okay to be that human and to combine those worlds.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I think that's, you know, trying to be one of the messages that I've spread as talking about Ari and talking about the Hurricane book, that this is a children's book, but it's not just for kids. Because when I was in the NICU, I needed someone to give me this boost of bravery. You know, they kept telling you, oh, he can feel your energy and he can feel that you're here. Well, my energy was really scared. My energy was really anxious, and I needed someone to kind of look me in the eyes and say, you got this. you can do this. You guys got this. They can never tell you you're going to be okay, because there was a real possibility that he wasn't. But I needed that bravery, and I kept feeling this pressure of like, if I'm anxious, he's going to feel my energy and he's going to be anxious. And so this book is, the Ari book is for kids, but I've heard from a lot of parents as well that reading it, kind of, they were saying, there's a mantra in the book that says, I am brave, I am strong, I can do this. And I've heard from a lot of parents that they're saying, I am brave, I am strong, I can do this. And they're saying it to their kid, but then they're thinking, well, I need this too. I am brave, I am strong, I can do this. And same thing with My Feelings Are a Hurricane. It's a kid's book, but I've had a lot of parents like, oh, I felt this way too. Like, I kind of needed this too. and it's true. Like, you know, once you have kids, it's like, you know, you as a human are gone, but you're not. Mm-hmm. And we need to remember that we're still humans. We're moms, we're partners, we're, you know, counselors, whatever our job title is, you know, we wear a lot of hats, but underneath all those hats, we're still humans.
Yeah.
And individuals.
Yeah. Was there anything that as a therapist, you kind of going through what you went through, either expected to handle better than you did or noticed just about NICU life that was like, oh, I can put my therapist hat on and like see this from a different perspective?
I think my husband was a little better at that than me, because we have these conversations of like, well, this is me as a mom, but this is me as a therapist, you know, or there will be times that we'll like look at each other or have conversations afterwards. And we're like, man, that was not very, you know, therapizey of you. And, you know, for being in the NICU, you know, there were times that, you know, every day you have to get up and put one foot in front of the other and do what you need to do. And there were days that I really didn't want to do it. And especially the first day that he was in the NICU, they were like, his breathing is a little weird. We're going to go take him and take a look and bring him back. And then the next day they were like, oh, he's, you know, barely hanging on. Like, he's breathing with full maximum oxygen support and we don't know if he's going to make it. Like, and so my husband was in the NICU, but because I had a C-section, I was staying in my hospital room, and they kept telling me, you know, get up, go see him, go be with him, go be in the NICU. And I was like, I can't, mm-hmm. I can't do that. I don't want to. And at first I was really ashamed and embarrassed of myself that I didn't want to do that, but it was really, really hard for me to go and see him struggling and to wonder if I was going to bring him home and not knowing what to do. And I think back now that, you know, oh, well, I wish I had, you know, a hospital social worker to be able to help me through some of those feelings and emotions. That wasn't something that they offered at the hospital that I was at. And now looking back, I think about, you know, the woulda, shouldas, mm-hmm, sure. But in the moment, it was, that first day was just really hard. And I didn't really go see him all that much because it was too hard, but my husband was there. My husband was, you know, able to kind of switch back and forth between like, okay, this is what we need to do versus this is what I need to do. This is what he needs to do. And he was able to kind of like, almost like make a task list for everybody and kind of get into like, you know, caretaker therapist mode for right. Everybody else.
Hyper-functioning.
Yeah. Yeah. Which then when we came home and he was like, wow, I need a break. And I was like, yeah, you do. And then we kind of switched. And he took a little bit of a break and I took on more of like, okay, let's plan, let's organize, let's, you know, and we had to switch because he was like, I'm exhausted. Mm-hmm. And I can't do this again. And you know, so, but that's kind of one of the cool things of both of us being in this field is like, we tag team a lot and it doesn't all fall on one of us.
Yeah. I was going to ask what the impact was on your marriage. And it sounds like you're able to really see each other's strengths and try and kind of keep that balance. Is there anything else that felt like it was a development through all of that?
Yeah, definitely. So I struggled with postpartum depression with my first. And because I had a really, really rough pregnancy with her. And I had almost wondered if there was like a prepartum depression because I had such a rough pregnancy with her that I was really struggling emotionally throughout her pregnancy. And then having her and, you know, just having your first kid and, you know, the struggle on any marriage with having your first child, that was tough. So when I got pregnant with my third, about 5-6 months into the pregnancy, we started going to therapy because I wanted to be prepared and not fall into, or you can't like just not have postpartum depression, but I wanted to, you know, kind of get myself feeling better, and set up for a little bit better success. Mm-hmm. So we were already in therapy when all that happened. So that was kind of a blessing.
Yeah, because such a gift.
We had some like tools and strategies set up for us. And I'm sure, you know, it's very hard to therapize therapists.
Yes.
So that was interesting, but I think that it was really hard. I mean, being together all the time is hard enough on a marriage when you're not used to it. Mm-hmm. And then having that situation, it was a challenge, but we were already in therapy. So we were able to bring the challenges to therapy, and talk those through, like already set up and mm-hmm. not having to worry about like, you know, going through it. I think that a lot of people wait until they're struggling before they go to therapy, or they wait until they hit like a rock bottom before they go into therapy. And then it's harder to recover. And so the fact that we were already engaged in therapy and kind of had that like already going, mm-hmm. I think helped a lot because we were able to just kind of pick it up and keep going and not have to, you know, not worry about the should we, shouldn't we, should we, now we have to find someone. And, you know, just the setting up of going to therapy a lot of times is a challenge mm-hmm. for people, you know, before they even get to the therapy part. So mm-hmm. we kind of like already had that all hashed out, which was really just, like I said, it was a blessing to have already been established like that.
Yeah. I love that. Was there anything, if there's a mom or a dad or a caregiver listening to this, who's in a dark night, perhaps, or, you know, their kiddo's in the NICU and they don't know where things are going to go, what would you say to them as an encouragement or someone who's made it to the other side?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I did in the Ari book was, he's in the jungle, but there's a lot of really unusual things happening in the jungle. He comes across a rhinoceros that is a fire-breathing rhinoceros. And there's a flying alligator. There's a snake with legs. So like, if you look inside of the pages, there's a lot of things that don't belong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on the outside, it might just seem like colorful and fun and he's hanging out in the jungle. But the reason that I chose to do that was because he was in the jungle, but the jungle looked different. It didn't look like what he expected. And at the end, he gets through the jungle and he's successful in his adventure. And it all works out, but it's different than what he expected. Mm-hmm. And that was really my journey. He was my third kid. I knew what kind of parent I was. I knew, you know, what this birth was going to go like. It was my third C-section. Like, I knew what I was getting into. I knew what I was about to go through. I knew parenting. Like, I knew it. I was set. And then all of a sudden, it was not at all what it was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one of kind of the hidden messages that I had in there, but really what I want parents to get from it is that even though it looks different, you still can be brave, you still can be strong, and you still will get through it. You will always get through it, no matter how different, no matter how crazy, no matter how unusual it looks or it feels, you still will get through it. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of my parent message in the book, that you will get through it. It might look different, but you will get through it.
Perfect. Where can we find you if we want to learn more about you or one of your books?
Yeah, so I'm all over the place. So the best way to learn more about me is directly on my website. It's arithebrave.com. You can buy my books there. We also have some teaching guides with like worksheets and activities that go along with the books. We have a plushie. So the Ari's sidekick in the book is a pink cheetah. And so I've heard from a lot of kiddos that the pink cheetah is like their physical boost of bravery. Like if they need to hold on to something to be brave, she's the one that reminds him throughout the book that he's brave. Mm-hmm. And so we have those. And then just learning more about me and about Ari and my other kids too. Are just all on the website. And then you can find me on Instagram and on Facebook. I'm on TikTok. Like, I'm all over the place, but my website would be the first stop. Perfect.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for sharing. It was so awesome to hear more of your story and your experience. And I look forward to ordering my copy.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on today. And I love following you. It's always nice to find another therapy mom.
We're our own special breed, that's for sure.
We certainly are, yes.
All right, I'll talk with you soon. All right, so now we're with Andrew, which is Crystal's husband and Ari's dad, and he's gonna tell us his side of their experience. Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome. Thank you. So my side of experience starts a little bit earlier than Crystal's, because obviously she was in the OR, getting a secondary procedure done, getting closed up, as we say, while I was in the recovery room with Ari. Mm-hmm. Now, I had been in that recovery room two other times. Both times we had family with us. The babies were with us, and, you know, it was relatively uneventful as a birth can be.
Sure.
This time obviously was completely different. No family, very, very, even for a hospital, more sterile feeling. Mm-hmm. And so I was holding Ari and not really thinking much of anything other than, oh my God, we have this beautiful baby boy. And I had all of Crystal's stuff with me too. Because that's the point. You leave one room, you go to the OR, and then you go to the recovery, and you go to the next room. So you got to carry all your stuff with you.
Sure.
And so I grabbed her phone, and I made a little video. And I was like, this is going to be so cute. She's going to love this. So I made a little, hi, mommy, we're here waiting for you video on her phone. And the nurses are doing their thing. No one's really paying attention to us. And then they come over to check on him. And they say, oh, he's feeling a little bit cold. Let's put him down and wrap him up. not a problem, you know, not thinking much of it. And as soon as she puts them down, the nurse goes, oh, I don't like that. Mm. And my kind of radar goes off. I'm like, uh-oh, like, what is this? Mm-hmm. So I see her working on him. She's not talking to me. She's talking to herself. And she's looking at him, and she has her stethoscope, and she's listening. And then she goes, okay, I'm going to flip him over. And all of a sudden, she lays him on his belly. And now I'm like, well, this is bizarre. It's back to bed. You don't put a baby on your belly. Like, what's happening? And then she's watching him. And I notice he's kind of almost looks like he has a hiccup when he breathes. He's just kind of bouncing a little bit. I'm like, that's weird. And it's also weird that she said he was cold and she doesn't have any blankets on him. So I'm watching, and a second nurse comes in, and they start talking. And the first nurse is, again, I don't like this. I flipped him over. I see this thing happening. I'm like, why is no one talking to me? What's happening? Mm-hmm. So then the second nurse starts watching, and they're watching him. And then the second nurse goes, okay, I'm going to go to the NICU and talk to them. And she walks out, and the first nurse turns around to me. And at this point, I'm like, what is happening? And I couldn't tell you what she told me. All very, very doctory and scientific. And basically she's like, you know, it doesn't look like he's breathing well. And I'm like, oh my God. And she flipped him back over, and you can see he looks like he'd been running, his chest just big and down. And there's a little lump in the middle of his rib cage. I'm like, what is that? And she's like, oh, that's normal. Just goes to show how much I didn't know what's going on. So they're watching him. So all of a sudden, you know, I'm holding him, and we're all good, and now we're not. And the NICU nurse comes in, and she starts watching him. And she's, you know, very young looking. And I was young when I started my career, and I remember being like, no, I'm fully qualified. So I don't like to have that feeling, but I was like, I don't know about you. And about this same time, they wheel Crystal back in, and they're kind of, you know, setting her up. And the NICU nurse, you know, looks at me and says, we're going to take him for observation. I go, excuse me? She's like, yeah, it'll just be, you know, an hour or two. He'll be fine. It's not a problem. It looks like he maybe swallowed some fluids on the way out. We're going to observe him. We're going to bring him back to you. And so essentially they're wheeling my wife in, and they're wheeling the baby out. Mm. And I'm like, oh my God, what do we do now?
Right.
And that's probably the part of the story where Crystal starts in, where now we're in recovery, the baby's not, and life starts to go crazy. So we get out of the recovery, and the baby is in the NICU, and Crystal's in her room, and I have the struggle of, where do I go? You know, do I go with my wife, who, you know, just had major surgery and is recovering? Do I go to this baby who probably has more nurses working on him than Crystal does, but like, he's got no one with him, in my mind. And there's this struggle. And so initially I'm like, well, we gotta get Crystal moving. We gotta go together. Like, this is our kid. We always do things together. Mm-hmm. We don't split up. But then reality sets in very quickly that, again, she just had major surgery. She's not going anywhere. So this starts the conversation. What should I do? Where should I go? What should I do? Where should I go? And finally, I'm like, listen, you know, are you okay? Do you need anything? No, I'm going to go with him for just a little bit. So I go, and there he is, right up front. There's a nurse, Amy was her name, hovering over him. You know, how are things going? It's been about an hour and a half. You know, is he almost ready to come back? Oh, no, he's not getting better. Come outside. Let me show you how to wash your hands and put the gown on. And I'm like, huh? And I look around, and I'm in regular clothes, and everyone else is in gowns, and everyone's cell phones are in bags. I'm like, oh, okay. So this silly process, but here we are. She's showing me, you know, here's the scrubber, here's the soap, you know, do this, do that, you know, put this on, put your cell phone in here. Okay, now you can come in. Okay, great. Don't touch him. Don't bother him. You know, we need him to rest. I go, what do you mean? She's like, he just needs to rest. Okay. So she goes over everything. The doctor will call me. He's going to talk to you. Okay, great. but what is worst case scenario? And they're like, don't worry about worst case scenario. That's not going to happen. And I'm like, no, I've been around long enough. What's worst case scenario? I need to know. It'll yeah. make me feel better. And with that simple question, kind of started our hospital process, or my hospital process, because every single time the doctors would tell us, we're going to do this, and this should happen, this should happen, this should happen. And I go, well, but what's worst case scenario?
Mm-hmm.
And every time, worst case scenario happened. So it went from 2 hours to we're going to keep them 4 hours to 10 hours. We're going to keep them overnight. Now we're on day two, and constantly, and Crystal is amazing. She's a trooper. She's waking up. She's pumping, even without the baby in the room. She's amazing. I would get up and I take care of her. I do whatever she needs, get her ice, get her whatever. And then I go down to the baby, and I'd go through this ridiculous process of, you know, washing into the NICU, putting my phone in the bag, putting on the gown. And then I'd go and sit with this, you know, not tiny baby, biggest one we've had, the biggest one in the NICU. And I'd watch him struggle to breathe. And then I leave for the final time that night, and they go back to the room. I get a little bit of sleep. And then all at the same time, the NICU nurses come in, Crystal's doctor comes in, and they're almost talking to us at the same time, telling us that he's not doing well. He needs to get intubated. But also, Crystal's iron levels are outrageously low.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a real need for blood transfusion. And it's just like, in that moment, the world crumbled. And it's like, Jesus, like nothing's going well. Like, this is a problem. And I think at that moment, I know Crystal talks about, you know, what it was like to think, well, we might not leave this hospital with a baby. We might not end this pregnancy having a third child. And I think for me, that was the moment where I was just like, wow, like what is happening? Like things are beyond real now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, we got through that moment, but for the next, you know, 2 or 3 days, it was just that cycle on repeat of, this is what our process is. This is what should happen. Well, what's worst case scenario? And then, you know, however much time later, well, worst case scenario happened. So that was kind of my experience in the hospital. And then out of the hospital, we get discharged like normal, except we leave without a baby. And it's COVID. We forgot about right. that part.
The world is so zoomed in, and then...
Right? Yeah. So what's visiting policy? One person once a day. I'm like, yeah, but there's two of us. What do you mean one person once a day? Like, one person at a time, I get. But once she leaves, I can come in, right? No, it's one person once a day. And we live an hour away. And we have two other kids.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah,
COVID, yeah. So there's no school, there's no daycare. So it's like, wow, what are we going to do? And I, you know, it's this time I think about the neighborhood we live in now, and we had moved about a year before, give or take, and we always said, like, you know, the neighborhood we used to live in, it's not as family oriented, and this neighborhood is. We know that about this neighborhood, and I'm so thankful for that, because we had friends, we had people who, hey, can I drop the kids off, and I'll pick them up this evening. I don't know when,
mm-hmm.
and yeah. Go ahead, go do it. So here I was driving, you know, poor Crystal, who's still recovering from major surgery, you know, an hour in morning traffic, you know, sometimes more, dropping her off. Now she's at the hospital. She can't eat, she can't drink, she can't do anything. And I go home and I work. Because in my head, I have FMLA, but I don't want to waste my PTO time. Because I need it for when the baby comes home. Because right. eventually the baby has to come home. Yeah. So now I'm working and trying to like push all this aside till it's time to go pick up the kids, go take them another hour up north, pick up mom, turn around, and drive another hour south. rinse and repeat again. And it wasn't until day like six, I finally got to go. Mm-hmm. And this was the first time, and I'm driving up and I got stuck in traffic, worst traffic of the day. And I'm angry and I'm cursing in my car and I'm texting Crystal at the same time. Don't text and drive. I'm not an advocate for that, but I was. And I told her and I said these words, and I don't think I really knew what they meant to me, but I was like, you know, my time with him is being stolen away. Because at that point I only had a couple hours. I had to get home in enough time to be there for the older kids, because Crystal still wasn't able to take care of them yet. And here I am sitting in traffic and I can't be with him and I can't talk to him and I can't see him. And just brutal, absolutely brutal. And there's the one time I could go, because very soon after that it was, well, any day now he'll be able to eat, and once he can eat he can come home. And obviously we're very pro breastfeeding, and so it had to be Crystal. It wasn't a choice. If he can eat and he can nurse, we want that, you know. We want that for our family, and you know, I would still do that now, but ultimately that also means that, you know, I have no chance to go see him. Mm-hmm. So I mean, we went from this real little world of NICU to a little bit bigger to a little bit bigger to now I'm pushed out of it. Mm-hmm. Until finally, you know, he could come home, which thankfully he did.
Yeah.
But so that was kind of my experience throughout the process.
Yeah. And she talked a lot about how supportive you were of her and kind of just keeping the whole family together during that process, which we talked a little bit about. And I'm wondering, like, how did you get what you needed, or when did you realize? She said at some point you were like, okay, I need a turn to like take care of myself after going so hard for so long. What was that like for you?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I'm someone who does fairly well in crisis. Probably, I think I do probably better in crisis than in calm. So in the thick of it, it wasn't a matter of, you know, we got to take care of. It was, these are the things that have to happen. Mm-hmm. Crystal has to go see the baby. The kids cannot drive 4 hours in the car a day, so we have to find someone to babysit them. Mm-hmm. And Crystal cannot drive. She just had surgery. So it has to be me. And it was really more, you know, we have to do these things. We have to figure this out. And Crystal had surgery, and Crystal's waking up in the middle of the night and pumping, and Crystal's doing this and that and the other, and all these unspoken things that mothers have to do that now she's doing without a baby. Mm-hmm. So it felt essential, I think, that, you know, I have to figure these things out. It's not fair to ask her. It's not right to ask her. Like, I'm a dad, I'm a fully functioning parent. And, you know, I feel like I've always been involved, but here's the time. This is, again, when you need to step up as a parent and do your part. And that's really how I saw it. And then it was towards the end. I think it was the second time I saw him a couple days before he came home. And I realized, I was like, I gotta go. Like, I'm not okay not seeing him. Like, it's been too long. And, you know, all our kids I've been very involved with, especially when little. You know, Crystal and I had a great system. I changed diapers, she would feed, so we were always up together at night, but not, you know, as long as if one of us was just doing all of it. And then all of a sudden, like, I didn't have that, and I felt very, very empty. And I just realized, like, I need to see him. You know, I haven't seen them, and they need to.
Yeah. It's so been common with some of the dads I've talked to, of in those moments you feel kind of pushed aside, or you either can really focus your brain on what do I do, right? What can I do? But there are sometimes moments where you can't do anything besides be the one who's there and be the one who's standing there next to them and encouraging them. And that can be a hard place to be for men sometimes when action feels more tangible.
I mean definitely I want to like get my hands in it. I want to do things and you know, I remember the first diaper they let me change. I was like so excited, you know, here's a poopy diaper and I was like, yeah, I got this. I got two other kids before. Boys are a whole new diaper changing experience. Then you add some wires in. I'm like, this is a mess. But I was so happy to be in the mess.
Yeah. What do you think you would say to other dads who are having an experience like yours or a different medical challenge?
I think to recognize everyone has feelings. It's not just the mom. It's not just, you know, the grandma. It's not just the kids. You know, everyone's got different feelings and to recognize and honor your own. I think it's all too easy to say, no, I'm fine and not talk about it, not acknowledge it. And I'll speak for myself, at least when I do that, you know, I unfortunately usually end up lashing out at someone who doesn't need it. Now, not only is whatever's going on, I also need to take a step back and apologize. Say, hey, I didn't mean to snap at you. I'm really sorry for that. Only making things worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we keep it all in, it finds its way out for sure.
Yes.
How do you think that this experience impacted your marriage?
I think it brought us back together just a little bit more again. You know, we've always been good in crisis and you know, our first daughter was born and she was a month early, but healthy but her body temperature was low. So they took her not to the NICU, but just the nursery and put her in the incubator to keep her warm. And at that point, you know, there was family there, you know, it wasn't COVID. So thankfully, you know, I left Crystal with family and I went to the nursery and I was with her. And then her body temperature was fine. And they're like, well, we're going to keep her because mom's on the magnesium drip. And I was like, but I'm here. Dad's here. And like, yeah, but mom can't hold her. I was like, okay, I can. And, right. And like, I had to advocate for like the baby to come back. And, you know, I think in these times of crisis like that, like the NICU, Florida, our hurricanes, it really bands us together. We get very good at figuring out, you know, what needs to happen, how can we do this for each other, and then seeing those tangible, you did this for me, I did this for you, is just a reminder of I'm here for you, mm-hmm. I'm your person, I'm gonna be here for you in good and bad.
Love that. Any other pieces of your experience that you feel like were lessons or things that you would want to share before we?
I think the one thing is kind of how the world views NICU dads. I don't know if that's a real term, but I'll throw it out there.
It is today.
it is today. You know, I was actually, it's funny, just before this, I was on a work meeting and we had show and tell to make it more interactive. And it was, you know, what's something special to you? And there's Crystal's book and it always is, you know, Ari the Brave. So I shared it and we had small groups. And then of course I got nominated to share it with the big group. And time and time again, regardless of how well people know me or don't know me, when I share my experiences, they're like, wow, I had no idea like a dad does all that. And it's always just like, we do, we're here. You know, right. it's not something that should be gawked at or scoffed at. It's something that, you know, we're here and we want to be here.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. I love that. It's equal participants and you're showing up just like any other parent.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for telling us your story. It was so fun to hear your side and kind of what the dad experiences during a moment like that. So I know there will be a lot of dads out there who connect with that and benefit from you sharing. So thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.
Oh my gosh, so many great moments in those interviews. I love that they talked about being in couples therapy and what the impact was on their relationship, overcoming those initial fears of going to see your baby in the NICU and how scary and embarrassing it feels sometimes to feel that way, being able to create meaning from trauma and the systemic healing that happened with their daughter and throughout their whole family. Also, the role of dads with newborns. All of those are such important topics, and I really love how much they hit home on how complex and how impactful this experience really is. Thank you to both Crystal and Andrew for lending me their time. It was kind of fun to interview them separately and hear the contrast and similarities in their stories. I thought it was so interesting how there was a bit of a big picture, small picture contrast in the ways that they shared. Crystal talking about the meaning she made of these experiences and how her identity grew, Andrew talking about those small moments that take your breath away and really showing up as a dad, which can often be delegitimized in our culture and medical model. I think their story is a really lovely example of recognizing your own needs and balancing that with supporting your partner's and your child's, even in the midst of utter chaos. How having a true teammate can make you that much stronger, and how important it is to remember that foundation when everything else starts falling apart. Don't forget to go check out Crystal's book over at her website, which is in the show notes. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode. I hope it was inspiring and encouraging for you and your journey. If you enjoyed it, I love it if you could share it with your friend, subscribe for future content, and leave us a 5-star review. This will help us grow our reach so others can join our community of support. If you would like to share your unique story with the Challenge Accepted community, feel free to reach out to me on social media, Stephanie Lucas MFT, on Instagram or Facebook. Thanks for being a part of our team.